Allah Taala's creation. A lot of good in man, then there are certain weaknesses in him as well. If he works, then he'll go above the animal kingdom, he'll ascend above the jinnat, and he'll elevate himself even above the malaika. فَسَجَدَ الْمَلَائِكَةُ كُلُّهُمْ أَجْمَعُونَ. So the capacity for growth, the ability to progress, is in mankind. But if he retrogresses, then he collapses, he drops, and he drops so hard, ثُمَّ رَدَدْنَاهُ أَسْفَلَ السَّافِلِينَ أُولَٰئِكَ هُمْ شَرُّ الْبَرِيَّةِ. He drops so hard that he falls into the deepest pit. Deepest pit of misery, problem, hell. So if he elevates himself, he goes so high. But if he neglects himself, then he falls. So Allah Ta'ala has created something unique in man. The capacity to aspire. That's a unique thing in man. Aspire, aspire, aspire. So this capacity to aspire, long, in itself is not wrong. It is how the person uses it. If he uses it incorrectly, then he goes wrong. See now, if he uses it for zina, right, then he goes wrong. How it happens? See, look at the punishment of zina. Number one. And then look at zina itself. So there is a connection, a relationship between the crime and the punishment. So the punishment is either 100 lashes, or either, if it's a married person, then he must be stoned to death. I will see something common in this. The common thing that you see in this is the body. Lashing, and the pain is felt throughout the body, right? Stoning, pain is felt throughout the body. So, there's a common line between both the punishments. Now, I say there is a connection, there is a relationship between the punishment and the crime. So what is the relationship? When a person falls into zina, then no matter how many times he committed the crime, he doesn't feel satisfied, he doesn't feel satiated. Because his mind says, maybe this girl's got something additional. So he's tried all, so many people he's committed zina. But that still lingers in his mind, that this one has got something additional. You see this aspiration, where it takes you. If it's misguided, then how it takes you. So that's why the punishment is lash the entire body. Because the body wants something additional. So it wants a comfort or enjoyment that can be experienced by the entire body. Please show this one, and this one, and this one. So he wants an additional thing. At no point he feels fully satisfied. Even, for example, there are a billion women, right, in the world, and he's finished all but one. He'll still think, you know, but that one day got something additional. So that's why the punishment, it lashed the entire body. So that sin has, like, that crave has permeated every part of the body. It's permeated every part of the body, so this is the punishment. The founder of Dharam Dioban, come back to this aspiration just now. One of the founders is Maulana Muhammad Yaqub Sahib. He's a very close cousin to Muhammad Qasim Sahib, rahmatullahi alayhi. And the childhood and the adulthood was like the same, coming up, going to study, all around the same. Very close-knit family relationship and work, and the place at that work also, they try to be always together. Maulana Yaqub Sahib rahmatullahi alayhi had seen that there were some ducks that were flying and coming from Bareilly. Right. So that's the dream that he'd seen. Duck coming from Bareilly. So he asked Qasim Sahib Rahmatullahi as to what's the meaning. Mawla says, see, you raise the mitai, then it will be 20. And if you don't arrange the mitai, it will be 11. Oh, it's working out in his mind. How does this work now? He's arranged mitai and all that. But now they're two cousins, and they're very close. So obviously they'll have some humor between themselves. So what he's telling him, arrange the mitai, it's 20. And if you don't arrange the mitai, then it's 11. He said, well, don't kid around, Lord. Tell me exactly how does it work now, 20 and 11. He says, a duck is called a bat. The difference is, in Urdu is without the tashdeed, but in Arabic it's with the tashdeed, buttun. One. Then this alphabet's got numerical values. Right? Ba, the numerical value for ba is 2. And the numerical value for pa is 9. If you take it in Urdu, how much it'll add up to? 11. Why? Because there's no tashdeed. So if you give the interpretation in Urdu, you'll get 11. But in Arabic, how much you get? 20. Why? Because the ta is repeated. It's a tashdeed. And it happened such that there was a request from Mawla to go to Bareilly, and he got that salary also. So they had a very good understanding, both of them. both cousins, family, walk together, joke with each other. And at times they would be hard on each of the exiles. So, Qasim Sahib Rahmatullahi says, Buzuganadin, and as they escalate, they don't let them disappoint anybody. They wish to please people for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. Kisi ka dil rakhana, right? Because they say that the heart is the place of the tajalli of Allah Ta'ala, where the special nur of Allah Ta'ala descends, that's the heart. Then the heart then activates the entire body. So we can't hurt the heart, because that's where Allah Ta'ala descends. If Allah Ta'ala descends, then how can you hurt the heart? Someone gave him one topi. Mawla Qasim Sahib Rahmatullahi gave him a topi. And that topi had some embroidery. Now, for you to understand all that would be a little bit difficult. But some years ago, there used to be dresses, women used to wear, a lot of embroidery. And there was one type of dress I can still remember. Right? The embroidery is in gold, pure gold. So they wear that on special occasions. You know, you get lace and all that. So the lace will be pure gold. So they wear that type of dresses. And I've seen those things. So someone gave one Qasim Sahib the topi. And the topi had some work, you know, gold and all that. Perhaps Muad hasn't taken note of it. But there's some gold. But now Muad is trying to please the person that gave the gift. And he put that topi for some time. So the giver will feel that Muad appreciates my gift. How he feels, it's nice, you know, I use my gift. In the meanwhile, Mawla Muhammad Yaqub Sahib came and he saw Mawla Qasim Sahib wearing that topi. So he took out his stick. He's wearing gold, haram. He had to correct him. So anyway, he removed that topi, put on. So the relationship was there, right? Very simple, straight. That's called a friend. Now others, you don't call a friend. I need to correct you, then I'll correct you straight. No, I don't have to beat around the bush, tell you some stories and that, tell you straight. And you need to tell me, you tell me straight. So, that type of a friendship. In the meanwhile, Muhammad Yaqub Sahib Rahmatullahi, he had a passion for a little bit of gardening. So gardening of the essentials, like, you know, fudina, dhania, all the small things that they require in the kitchen, right? They call pot herbs. And our Gujaratis, you see, burji here. Yeah? So the small things that are used in the garden, Mona had a liking for it, to grow these things, plant these things. Mona Qasim Sahib came around and he saw this plant was fudina, dhania, some of these pot herbs and all that, right? So Mona shouted at him. You see, you've got the fertilizer, right? The fertilizer, who you want it from? He got it from some wealthy person, right? And the wealthy person had some animals, horse or oxen, etc. So he sent the fertilizer that Mona can use in his garden. Right? But now, the style in India at that time, and here also it happens, was that a style of forced labor, right? Forced labor, now how it works. I'm an influential person. Like, say I'm a police. I have influence. I can put you into trouble, right? So, now you're afraid of my influence. So I take this and go and deliver it. Have you got a chance to refuse? An ordinary person, has he got a chance? Someone is educated or that can do something. But an ordinary person, has he got? But the labor is now forced. But the labor is forced, is that permissible? So once you've got this thing, it's haram, this thing. Well, Yaqub Sahib straight away packed it up, sent it back. So the relationship was a very open relationship, free, a lot of understanding. Yaqub Sahib and Al-Mawal Qasim Sahib, rahmatullah alayhi wa sallam. We are talking of aspirations and we just digressed, right? So, Mawal Yaqub Sahib was such, was a very busy person, very, very busy. And the Madrasa would allow it. This is the type of a person, the genius of a man, and he's very busy. But if he's caught up in some work, and the teaching work was left, he'll come and cover it up. But Allah blessed him like this, that what can be explained in, say, half an hour, he had the ability to explain it in 5 minutes. He explained it so well, he's captured the whole thing, and he can explain it in just a few words, he can explain it. So that was Mawlana Yaqub Sahib rahmatullahi. So he gave an example to illustrate zina, right? And how to reset your mind, to reprogram your mind, so that you can save yourself from zina. It's just a reprogramming. To program your mind, and a thing becomes easy for you. If you don't program your mind, the simple thing becomes complicated, difficult. So he says, Mawlana says, see, there are 3 type of needs, right? One type of need is such, that the need dominates. The need is dominant, right? But in the process of fulfilling that need, you feel some ease, right? So, the need is dominant, but in the process of fulfilling that need, you feel some ease, right? Like you want to make qisas, right? For number 2. So, is it done for enjoyment, satisfaction, right? For taste and pleasure? No, it's done to relieve yourself. But in the process, you find some enjoyment, some ease, right? Don't you find? But there is a second type of need, he says, where there is the need, but it's equaled up with enjoyment. Need and enjoyment, right? So there is both the dimensions, the dimension of need and the dimension of pleasure. So the example for that, he said, is food, right? It's a need, right? So you eat as you need, but don't you make it enjoyable? You can say, khajur, a date is a very, very nourishing food. I'll just have khajur and water enough. Will you do that? Or you'll have a whole variety, right? Especially in the month of Ramadan. So much of variety, right? Samosa, bhajiya. Then one day was have half moon. Then nowadays women talk about rockets. all the varieties. And with the variety, then the chutneys, not only one chutney, 10 type of chutneys, right? Then you can't do with one type of food throughout the year, right? How the animals eat grass, all year they eat the same thing, right? But will you be comfortable with one type of food? So there's a whole variety. So there is the dimension of need, but there's a dimension of pleasure. So it both is balanced out, right? So this is the second type of need. So the one where the need is dominant, and one is both need and enjoyment. You find both are balanced, right? Then the third type of need, he says, where the pleasure is dominant and the need is by the way. What dominates is the pleasure, and by the way it's a need. So the example for that, he says, is intimacy, right? Now intimacy, if you don't have that intimacy, you die. You won't die. Otherwise, if you say you will die, then I don't think that Tabligh Jamaat would have survived, right? They go for 6 months, 4 months, 1 year at a time, but they still survive, isn't it? So they don't die. So students studying in the madrasa, they're coming in at around Adadiya, around 14, right? So they're already of age. And they're pulling right at 21. They started at 15, then 22. So if this was so important, they would have died. So it can survive without this thing here. It shows the need is not so great. All right, there's a need, but the greater, the thing that is dominant here is the enjoyment. Like in the first example, the thing that was dominant was the need. In the last example, the thing that was dominant is the pleasure. By the way, it's a need as well. Right? Right? Fazlji Rahmatullah didn't like that this type of thing was made into an addiction. Now it's like an addiction now. Someone is addicted to these things here, and every now and then he must have it. Right? So the addiction, he didn't like it. Especially to this third category, he didn't want it to be an addiction. And the reason why he didn't want it to be an addiction, most of these Buzhuwara, they studied a little bit of Tibb as well. So when they study Tibb now, they understand the effects that if someone overindulges in this type of thing, this third type of pleasure, he overindulges, then his body becomes weak and lethargic. Right? His body becomes weak and lethargic. Number two, if he wants to sleep more, right? And number three, you will have the tendency of eating a little bit more as well. You see now, some students, right, a little bit slim and trim. And as they went to marriage then they built up, isn't it? Kurtas are becoming short, trousers is not too right. You can see now, right? So, they have a problem, right? Second problem. The third problem, he says, is when there's overindulgence, then the mind can get weak as well. The reason is obvious. The reason is this, that see, the fluid that comes out, right? That fluid has the capacity of building a man, right? Isn't it? It's got a capacity of building a man. When it's got a capacity of building a man, that means it's produced from a cell from every part of the body. Because that thing has got a capacity. to have intelligence, reasoning, bone capacity, organ capacity, right? So now someone is overindulging, right? So this is what's going to happen. Right? He's going to become mentally weak. That's the third point. Right? Now this is probably what the Hakims say, right? Whether science agrees or disagrees, that's a different thing altogether. Right? The fourth thing they say is, Allah protect us all, right? That's sometimes a person that overindulges, he can have a stroke of paralysis. He can have a stroke of paralysis, overindulging. The body becomes lame. It's not so active, right? So you can suffer from this type of thing, right? So one doctor was telling me that if you look at a first world country and a third world country, right? You know this, where they make this gradings of first world and second world and third world. So no person must feel inferior. And nobody must feel superior. The third world mustn't feel inferior. And the first world mustn't feel superior. Because it's a man-made thing. They said, oh, France and so is all first world, right? Who made them? They made it up, right? So they made it up. Now we don't have to be enslaved to their thinking. Why must we enslave ourselves to their thinking? We will say where there is more deen, right? More deen, more modesty, right? More fair play everywhere, right? Fair play, deen, and modesty. That is first one, we'll say. Why is what deen? And there is a lot of fair play and justice. Right? So, therefore, that will be first world. Now, therefore, a different interpretation for first world, we don't worry about that. So, I say the person that is in the first world, he mustn't feel superior. Third world, he mustn't feel inferior. But more times, one place he writes about these things here. So he says, whether the person is thinking he feels inferior or he feels superior, this is a reflection of pride, right? This is a reflection of pride. So he gives the reasoning. Where the person feels himself to be superior, obviously it's pride, right? But where he feels himself to be inferior, it's also pride, right? It's wrong and pride, right? Because in his mind, he feels, you know, I need to be there, see? Then I will be rated differently. I need to be there so that I can be rated differently. And these people that I'm living with, they're all menial people. So the people that are around, he looks at them with contempt. Right? Isn't that pride? People that he's living with, he looks at them with contempt. Right? Now, that same analysis, you can use it on a town. Right? Towns. Someone to be in a town, right? It's all super class, right? He wants to be there. One is now, just for the convenience, he went there. It's a different thing. That too won't be the better thing. But one is now, he wants to be known to be from a certain circle, and from this circle. So it's pride. Me, I come from Belito. Before you should see in motor car, now you don't see it now. Then he's driving, so he's got at the back of the car, my other car, you know, an old scrap car, he's got, so he's got a sticker there, the other car is a Porsche. This is all pride. Pride this is. Is it pride? This pride comes very discreetly. And you don't even realize it's coming. You want to be rated different, you want to be viewed different, you want to be seen different. They must look at you differently. You must be distinct. Whatever you're doing, you must be distinct. Well, that's a sign of pride. I say this as Dawah, right? And the female, these are the VIP guests, right? So you want to be on the VIP table, right? So isn't this pride? So that's why our Akabir, they like to be the rank and file, simple people. Where they could help it, they would be there. They wouldn't be living or they wouldn't be sitting with that class of people. They would prefer to be with this class. For multiple reasons. One, it's easier to be with them because they don't think much of themselves. When they don't think much of themselves, when you talk of something, they won't take an exception. But now it's a class, distinct class now. You see something out of place, then, hey, what's wrong with you? So you have to be thinking 10 times before you say one word. Now, this class here, you have to be so particular when you're discussing things. And this class here, it's so easy to get along. There was one time somebody used to say, he talked about aspirations, eh? Don't worry, we'll come back to each other. To say that when traveling, like I enjoy traveling in the third class. So he says that he gives a reason after that. What is the reason that he prefers traveling by third class? And why not in the first class? He says in the first class, you're paying about 5 times the price to be in the first class. But now, in the first class, everybody is stuck to himself. He won't even talk, he won't smile that side. Everybody's apprehensive now. I'm going to talk, what he'll say. Because he's a mota, he's a mota, everybody's mota. There's no chotas there, right? So when everybody thinks that he's a mota, big person, then does he feel easy to communicate with an expressing? It's very difficult. So now you're starting by the third class, you know, talking of Indian conditions, right? It's so easy. You say, it's open the window. So you talk freely, you sit freely, and then you find in Indian trains, you find, you know, people entertaining you. One person will come as a beggar, you know. And when he's begging, he's called his style of begging. He'll give one song, right? And then he'll give one, after that song, he'll give you one bayan. Gharibi or Amiri se pareshan nahi hona chahiye, ye kismat hai khuda hai, khuda ki kismat se khush hona chahiye. Bhai, thoda ek rifa de do, ek rifa. So you get that entertainment, right? Sometimes you can find one monkey trainer, he's coming in, right? Sometimes something strange, old. Even if it's a 70-hour journey, you don't find it. There's so much of entertainment. You're free, you can talk, speak. Right? You can shout someone, they'll shout you. And it carries on the whole journey, 7-8 hours, and you carry on. Mas is, I enjoy traveling in the third class. Free to do it, you can read namaz, so you can just do put a musalla. They will all just put their saman on one side, and they allow you to perform the namaz. See, their thinking, their reasoning, their mindset, what they like. Right? And personally, why I prefer this thing, you know, in living, reason is that when you're living in this type of a class, you know, we call it the second class or the third class, then you are free to live how you want. Not too many complaints and problems, right? Then, you will have a wealthy person, poor person, average class, all types of. You have an average class, you have a poor class. You have a 4 class, you can help the person. Average class, he needs also some type of a support, right? For example, he's got a wedding in his house, right? You know he's battling with it. So you help him out, all right, I'll get the stuff for you, I've got a bucky, I'll help you out. And that person will say, you know, don't worry, the chairs, I've got about 50, 60 chairs, it'll sort out for you. So when you're living with a mixed bunch, then you have got the occasion to help out, to see the person, to feel sorry for him, right? And you feel free to work with him, you can tell him things. But now it's a wealthy class, I say, it's enough, don't worry about it. We sorted out already. Now, will you have the heart to speak to him for the second time? If the first time he had that type of an approach, the second time can you speak to him? And it's very difficult. This class is easy. Now look at the hadith. Allahumma ahyini miskina wa amitni miskina. So Rasulullah SAW prefers to be with this class. So the type of people that you live with, you begin to have that type of mindset. Al-mar'u ma'a man ahabba. Who you like, you begin to have a mindset accordingly. And then the fourth thing, the illogical thing is this. See, wealth, etc. Are not things to go by. Because you don't know how the wealth just moves. Today is wealthy, tomorrow is gone down. Today is gone down, tomorrow is wealthy. Don't you find these fluctuations? So it's not a thing to be feeling very, very secure. You can't be secure about it. You don't know what's going to be your position. Now you seem to be secure, then you just go down. You feel insecure and you just come up. Doesn't happen. Don't you find any fluctuations? Now, imagine how the person was living in the lapse of luxury and his money is gone, but for him to adjust is easy. Then I've seen people, then you go into a depression, you don't want to talk, you feel so miserable within you, then you're going to have doubts, why Allah brought this upon me. But if you are living an average or a modest life, then to make adjustments easy, well, you weren't living a very, very lavish life. And a small adjustment doesn't make not a problem for you. You can manage. So, Allahumma ahyini miskino wa amitni miskina. So, our elders, this is what they liked. So, it's a mixed baggage, and then to make an adjustment is easy. The fifth problem in this is that, and you got a circle, right? Wealthy, right? Circle. So they got a lifestyle. Now then, you need to service the lifestyle, right? So this is how they eat, this is how they live, right? And when you eat like this, right, and you live like this, then you need to earn like that as well. Then, in order for you to earn like that, you need to have either that earning power, or you need to have investments. Right. Now, the thing that is not logical here is this, that the increase your wealth, is it within your volition? Can you make it happen? Can you make it happen? But yes, to be economical, live a simple life, right? Is that within your range, within your... That you can do. But to be flying up high all the time, is it within your range? But you're risking yourself. And then if you fall then, you fall very hard. And you see all your friends, and they'll ask you, what happened on them? What happened with the investment? And you don't know what to tell them. No face, because that's your circle. You lived with them, interact with them, socialized with them. And then as you fell... Now you can't face up to reality. But if it's a simple life, today I got biryani, tomorrow I got mug, and I'm happy about the whole thing. Really, if you look at it from this perspective, it's a ni'mat of Allah Ta'ala, and you take it per need, you really enjoy it. Even if it's a simple mug, suppose some achar or something, you sell that thing. But if it is that now you check yourself at a certain class, then for you to make an adjustment becomes quite difficult. So you're talking about pride, right? Pride and this elite. But then our elders warn us again. Yeah, I spoke about this here. But the elders warn us. In this type of a thing, more than you're preaching to the wealthy, you must preach to yourself. You're talking about pride and living in an elite style that already can cause the damages. So you don't talk too much to the elite, talk to yourself. Because if you're going to talk and preach too much to them, what's going to be the result? The result will be that you will be smashing them down, but after some time, you'll be longing to be there where they are. Won't it happen? You saw, hey, the comfort is gone, the luxury, the jacuzzi, it's got a pool, it's got an indoor swimming pool, what it's got, right? So you saw all these things here. So I'll be running you down, but within my heart, I'm longing for the same thing. So I'll be worse off then. That on the surface, I'm preaching to you, but within my heart and mind, I'm longing for the same thing. So that's the first wrong. The second wrong is that they say that you'll become a victim of self-admiration. Right? If you don't have that level of taqwa, that type of understanding, right, then won't you become a victim of self-admiration? So when you're preaching to him, you need to be preached. When you're preaching to him, you need to be preached. So more than talking to him, you must talk to yourself. It's not what I want. I want to just live a simple life. That's why our elders say that when a person is used to a simple life, then he's blessed. Most of the time he's blessed with the ability of doing a lot of khidmat for deen. Because he's not waiting now, I need to come to a certain class. And I come to the certain class, then I can serve. He doesn't have too many strings attached. But now, he got wealth, there's so many strings attached, responsibilities, duties, right? Can he do a lot of dini khidmat? Logically, it's going to be difficult about this responsibility, that. So many things he's got to do. I mean, spare time to do deen. But if a person is, he's disciplined himself to a simple life, right, then it becomes easy for him to be of service to deen. That is why Aisha radiallahu anha, she made dua for the ulama. That Allah Pak, don't let them be too prosperous. Now we may take it as a curse. And she's making this dua. So I saw this today. And I mentioned it, Qari Sahib went and checked it out. You know, which kitab he found. He found the same statement. Maybe the wording is a little bit different, but he found the statement. Right? Because now, when you're not too wealthy, there'll be some good would you, right? One is, it's easy to be a humble person, right? You won't have too much of taqazas and too much of demands. Simple life, so you won't have too much of demands, right? Number three is, you'll be looking at higher objectives. Higher objectives is not bettering the lifestyle. Higher objective is deen, what you can do for deen, how much of you can offer yourself for deen. So you look for higher objectives. So we are talking about all the needs, right? The needs can be of three types, I just showed, right? One is where the need is dominant and there is some sort of relief. And one is both are balanced out, right? And the third is where the enjoyment is greater and the need is by the way. Then I gave you the example, right? And then I branched off all these things here. So Mawlana says, in order for you to correct your mind so that you cannot be attracted to zina, etc., right? What you need to do is, see this third class, this third class, you bring it to the first class. First class was knees, right? By the way, relief. So just shift it from the third class to the first class. Is there a need? So you will indulge as per need. There's a pressing need, then you will indulge. It's not a pressing need, I can do without it. But are you that pleasure, you made it into a need. The pleasure, you made it into a need. Now can you live without it? Like, you know, a simple example is, right, a Coke, right? Now that's a pleasure, right? So someone made it into a need. Can he sleep without the Coke? Can he get up without the Coke? So he'll have to have it when he's sleeping, when he's getting up, he'll have to have it. So that was a pleasure, and he transformed it into a need. So this was a pleasure. Now just keep it as a pleasure and use it at the point of need. Now you'll go well, right? So you have to do some resetting of the mind. See, the mind needs to be adjusted, resetted. Right? And this will allow you, then you can go in Jamaat for 4 months, 6 months. You know, how do you go? What's happened to my family? All that. But you can't work. Can't do service for them, you can't do it. You're a healthier person, you're stronger, you're more determined, you can do things, right? You just readjust your mind. That's the one way he's explained how you adjust your mind, right? The second way, he's given an example how to adjust your mind so that you can moderate those urges, right? Urges moderated. See, today now, that urge becomes so dominant. One of the reasons for that to become dominant is when you're going out, you look at the dress, right? How they dressed. Then you look at your smartphone, all the pictures that come up there, right? Then the articles that you read, so that all consumes you. And say, no, I must have this, I must have this, I must have this. But so much you read, so much you view, so much you hear, that thing, it overwhelms your mind, you must do it, right? So really, it was not a need, it was induced. You induced that urge. It wasn't an urge, you brought about that urge. Was there an urge? There was no urge, but you brought it about. So now, that needs to be corrected. I show you the damage, right? But now, I'll show you one way how to adjust the mind. And the second way how to adjust the mind is, you know, where there is an overwhelming urge, right? So how to adjust and neutralize. This is now, when you look at this thing here, look at it just as a need, right? When you look at it as a need, right, then you will work with it differently. Right? Just look at it as a need, right? Alright, now look at it. I'll give an example, right? You got Coke, and you got six different type of containers. You got a can, you got a cup, you got a glass, you got a bottle, you got a mug, for example, right? You got a coffee cup. So there's five or six different type of containers, right? And what's the drink, what's the beverage? The beverage is Coke, right? So will it be any different if you drink it from a mug, or from a glass, or from a bottle, or from a can, or from a coffee cup? Will it be any different? So if you just readjust the mind, then you see there's no need in me, right? There is no need. But you say, hey, this one here. Look at this one here. Look at this teacup now, with the rose and all that. And look at this bottle, the shape. This thing must have got something additional. Right? So if you just adjusted your mind, it is just the need, right? And the need, whether it's young, old, shaped, not shaped, dressed, not dressed, same, the need is there. The need is in full class, right? You take it to the first class. You know how you said toilet, right? So, the need is fulfilled or not? It is fulfilled. Okay, to your work. But now you say, no, I must have it to the ultimate. then you need this type of a body, that type of a dress, that type of a cosmetics, that type of perfume, all that things, all the works, right? So your crave won't just increase, multiply. And the problem you'll have now is that you've got 3 children or 4 children, so now it's a granny, right? 4 children, so she has a granny. Now, will she have the same body as the day she got married? But she's not going to have the same body. You know, why you don't have the same body now? Why am I going to go to the gym and have that body? You know, you're going to spoil things. Sometimes she'll have to say, no, but I can't marry this thing here. Because there's more important things I need to attend to in the house than just gymming and looking after the body. That's what she'll have to say at some point. You know, do these things here, then I'm going to neglect my house, neglect my children. I will have to then, at some point, I have to just discount some of my haya and modesty. Something will happen. So if I just leave it one side, this is just a need. And the need is fulfilled, no khalas, end of the story. So you have to adjust the mind, reprogram the mind. So what we are talking about, with the grace of Allah, we are talking about aspirations. Right? And an aspiration is not a bad thing in itself, it's not a bad thing. Now, if it's misused, then it's a destroyer. Because that aspiration Allah has made, it's unlimited. You can aspire, so much. You want one valley of gold, you want the second valley of gold, you want the third valley. So you've got the capacity to aspire and aspire for so much. If you're going to let it loose here, then that aspirations will never end at any point. Because you are the second, you are the third one, you are the fourth one, and so forth, and so on, will continue until you die. One person is dying, in his deathbed he's saying, this commodity is for 5 rand, this is for 6 rand. 5 rand, 6 rand. So that went deep into his heart. So at the time of death, what he had a passion for, that came up. What he likes, kama tahyuna tamutun. Up till now, you get some cases where man is in sakrat, right? And his soul is not departing. So they'll take a gold, kruger coin or something, put it under his tongue, and his heart will just go out. So he built such an affinity that as though he got what he was aspiring for, and his soul just departed. But departed with what? With hubbud dunya. But I say again, the aspiration in itself is not wrong. It's how you use it. You use it incorrectly, so you're getting the incorrect results. A knife in itself is a good thing. Without a knife, can you eat? There's no knife at all, no concept of knife. Can you eat? How are you going to slaughter an animal? How are you going to clean the fruit and vegetable? How are you going to do it? But then it's how you use it. So that aspiration is used incorrectly, then you're getting destruction, you're getting a ruin. But the same aspiration is used in the right way. So you can score and you can gain much also. I'll just sit longer in the masjid and finish so much more Quran, so you'll get more salam. More. But that person is doing more than me, I must just try and increase my recitation. That person, he's got a better level of akhlaq. His akhlaq is so good. People tell him, but he's composed, got a smile on the face, he's not grudgy. He won't get back at the person. So such a composed person, such beautiful character, what can't I also have some character like him? And this person here, I see, whenever I see him, and there's a poor person, he's got the heart to give 5 rand or something, he's got the heart to give him. So Allah has given you the capacity to aspire, and an unlimited. Why? Because your reward is also unlimited. بِغَيْلِ حِسَابٍ. Doesn't come in hadith. بِغَيْلِ حِسَابٍ. Unlimited. So that's why he's created the capacity to aspire, because many deeds, the rewards are unlimited. So say, for example, the rewards were limited. Could you aspire? He's kept the reward, the realm of reward, so much. He's kept it like unlimited, so that you could keep aspiring for that. You need to do this, get this, and you aspire. You see. But now, how do we regulate this aspiration? How do we manage this aspiration? Because if you don't regulate this thing here, then the mind will play havoc with you, play games with you. You may ask, how will the mind play games with you? So now you're reading Durood Sharif, so then your mind says, hey, but you know, Quran Sharif, more sawab. So you move away from Durood Sharif to Quran Sharif. Then when you read Quran Sharif, then the thought will come, you know, Talim, more sawab. So from Durood Sharif to Quran Sharif, from Quran Sharif to Talim, right? And then from Talim now, you think to yourself, but hey, I'm only doing Talim, no Amal. So now let me go and do some Nafil Namaz. There will be Amal now. But I see how the mind will play games with you. So that has to be regulated. And how do you regulate it? Now that's now the last. Well, Khatani says, crunch Christian. Like somebody gives nice talks. So the crunch, what is the crunch? So if there is a crisis, then the Quran will definitely show you a solution. Allah made you, right? He's made the mind. See, this fascinating mind, great, fascinating mind, that's the product of Allah, that He made it. So if there's a crisis, He'll show you the solution. So the solution is, was'alullah min fadli. Ask Allah Ta'ala for His grace. Because no person knows in which form of grace will be best suited for him. Do you know which type of grace is more suited for you? Do you know? You don't know. You may think the better type of grace for you is that you have some wealth. But that wealth can become a problem for you. You may think that having the second wife may be the better form of grace. But that can become a disgrace for you. Can't it become? You think that's a better type of a grace, right? But can't it become? Can't it become the other way? Right? It can become a problem. Right? So you don't choose. What you do, you ask Allah Ta'ala. Allah Ta'ala, was'alullah, as'aluka min fadlik. Allah, I ask you for your grace. Because you made me and you know me best. So now you lead me to what is most gracious for me. You lead me towards what, to the grace that is most suited for me. I think, you know, to be giving azan is the best thing, so I'll do azan. But I don't know now. Perhaps I will be calling azan and in calling azan, I will impress people of my voice. Right? So I'm calling azan. So that may not be the better thing for me, because the pride or the self-admiration will get the better of me. So that may not be the better thing. So Allah Ta'ala will tell me, right now, you go and teach His class. As'aluka min fadlik, I ask you for your grace. So in which form your grace is more suited, Allah granted to me in that way. Isn't that a great dua? Therefore, was'alullah min fadlik, what's the ayat after that? Let's look at the ayat after that, what's the ayat? Let's see for now. Inna Allah bi kulli shay'in. How it fits so well. Allah Pak knows everything, what? He knows the past, He knows the future, He knows the present, He knows the person. There's nothing that is not in His knowledge. He knows it. He's got a full, absolutely perfect knowledge He's got. So He knows what is best for you. When His knowledge is perfect, then His choice also will be perfect. So you will keep asking big Allah in yas'aluka min fadlik. Allah Baktuf in the sequel. One thought is coming to my mind from some time. You know? I didn't mention it previously. So let me share it with you all as well. see, in this month, so you have to recite istighfar and la ilaha illallah in abundance, right? And ask for jannat and ask refuge from jahannam. Right? Yeah, I told the imams, let's just space it out, right? So we can read something in between. So otherwise, you read too quickly, no space, you can't read it. So the space that they give, alhamdulillah, I can finish comfortably 30 times la ilaha illallah and 30 times istighfar. So you conform with that. Now, if you leave it randomly, I ask you, how many of us do la ilaha illallah and istighfar in abundance in this month? You remember yesterday, someone who hit a shortcut now, astaghfirullah la ilaha illallah, asaluka al-jannah, auzubika min nar. That I don't like that. So that becomes a routine then. There's no soul and heart in it. Now, what I do in the tarweeha means the fourth rakat, after the fourth rakat, I mean istighfar and la ilaha illallah. So 30-30 comfortably you do it, right? And in this, after second rakat, then Allahumma inni as'aluka al-jannah wa a'udhubika min an-nar, with the heart, even if it's 3 times. But I ask you, won't the effect be magnificent? Because you've got the time before you can stand up for this. So the next rakat, you can comfortably say as'aluka al-jannah with heart, with the presence of mind. That is like the most important ingredient in a dua, as'aluka al-jannah wa a'udhubika min an-nar. But now you know, at this time I'm going to do this. Can you do it? Can you fit it in? Yeah. Allah will finish.